Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are pumped to bring on Treasure Monster Toys. This has been months in the making because you will hear in the episode that I fumbled and I messed up my weeks and didn't get them on. And they have just been on this creating tirade where they are creating some of the best nostalgia bringing toys that we've seen. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can help out the podcast by liking, reviewing, rating, subscribing, all the good things. And if you want to jump on and support even more, you can support the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. We have another toy in the works with SNZ Toys. We have the Barfy that was released with Bootleg Toy Co. So go on to toysontappodcast.com, pick up some goodness. Join the newsletter and stay up to date on the next goodness that's coming. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Hey, I'm pumped to get you on. I always like to announce my terrible nature on the podcast because sometimes this happens, and last time we had you scheduled, somehow there was a mix-up and we just walked past the week and didn't even connect.
Hey man, that's okay. It was a really busy time for me, and yeah, I'm sure, you know, schedules can get hectic for everyone.
So I'm so sorry, but I'm pumped that you're on. Actually,
I'm happy to be here, man.
Yeah, so I have so many questions because you are currently doing the thing that so many of us dream about. You're keeping the dream alive of nostalgia in toys that give us this feeling of old school TMNT and 90s and 80s toys, and breathing life into old IP and running Kickstarter, all kinds of stuff. So before we get started, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
So I'm Jonathan House. I'm the CEO, founder of Treasure Monster Toys. And we are, as you said, trying to keep the magic and the nostalgia alive with everything we have going on. And I'm really happy to be here.
That's such a good way to say it. I mean, to say that you're a CEO of a toy company, you did something good in your life. You are living the dream.
Yeah, well, it's, there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
Just like anything else, it has its highs and it has its lows. It has its challenges, it has its victories, and just like anything else you do. But it is, I'm very fortunate to be able to be involved with something where I can, use my creative mind and creative output, and not just me, but be involved with such an amazing team and community of collectors who have really fueled and made this whole thing possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is birthed out of, I'm assuming, how you grew up as a kid. So walk me back to childhood, toys you're playing with, cartoons you're watching. What's childhood look like for you?
Well, I grew up spending half of my childhood and over at grandma's house and projects and, in the rough parts of town, you might say. And I guess it was just like most, when you're a kid and trying to find your identity and what kind of gets you excited. And, when Saturday morning cartoons, that was an escape from life, and it was just an exciting thing that kind of breeds and grows imagination. And for me, whenever I was younger, it was always Batman and PMNT were my top two, and so that's the gist of it there. The magic of it.
Yeah.
And it's And now as adults, we want to hold on to that. We want to cherish that. Everyone is looking for ways to preserve value. That's like, and you can think of it in like monetary terms. It's like half the world's wealth. Everyone's trying to figure out where to put it to preserve that value. And that's exactly what we do as adult collectors and enthusiasts of nostalgia, is that we want to preserve that value because it means so much to us. You know, that's, we're growing up and we see, you know, TMNT and Batman, and that's what made us. And that's what,
Not going outside. Right.
that's, it's what made us. And,
Yeah, I
so.
mean, you. What's funny is like we. How I don't know how old you are. I grew up in the night, like born 1990. So some of the toys that you're describing, I got, but like the back end of it when I was old enough. And then the only Batman I had was the Batman animated series. So like, there's so many Batman figures before that that I didn't even get to play with.
Same here. And Batman the Animated Series was like my main Batman when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, the original Keaton Batman movie. And yeah, I'm 40. How old are you, Abe?
Oh, I'm only 34. So we got
You're
a
only
little bit of a gap.
34,
Yeah.
a young spring chick.
So I mean, that usually what happens, we have this like interest and this love for toys. And then something goes awry when we're 13, 14, 15, and all of a sudden toys disappear. Were you one of the lucky ones where that didn't happen?
I had some toys when I was younger.
Okay.
I didn't have a lot of toys.
Okay.
You know,
I
I
like
had that, and my mom heard me say that. She probably like want to smack me upside the head. Like, I had toys, but I didn't have like bountiful piles of toys where you know, I could kind of get it. My family was always really, you know, had to be frugal, you know. But my cousin, he had all the TMNT. You know,
Yeah.
he had one of the big football toy chests, you know, the big plastic football toy chest filled with TMNT. So
And I
it
don't
was
know
always great to
if
go over there and play with his. But
position's limit.
it's,
Come
you know, whenever I was a teenager, I was all about music, writing music, playing music. And I didn't get back into collecting and grasping every bit of nostalgia that I could until maybe until about 8 years ago, I'd say it was. And so, but it was one of those things that was always kind of there in the back of my mind, like one day, you know,
Yeah.
anytime I'd see something, like one day you will be mine, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's, I mean, does that mean we're, because it's
Oh,
still
everything.
what's funny about all that
Well, I
stuff
kind of don't see
and
that
so
at
many of
all.
these interviews is we go from like toys
Yeah,
and then
I
we
just don't
take
know. I
some
just don't know.
creative venture. So like
Okay.
music, huge creatively. Are we talking like you're forming bands as a teenager,
You don't have
doing all
to.
that kind of stuff?
Yeah. And it was that, and it was also art. I did a lot of oil painting. And so that's my departure from, you know, wanting to have the coming of age years was all about art, drawing, oil painting, and then it transitioned into music, starting bands, writing music.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys,
and toys that we make.
and we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be,
Yeah, you could. Who
but
knows?
you gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats,
Rats.
YouTube,
Bye.
you know,
Bye.
playing out. And so art, music, and now venturing back to the grassroots of the nostalgia, holding on to the simpler times, and kind of pouring all the creative juices into that.
Yeah. When we get to college, I'm assuming you do you go to college?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not. I was so, I hated school so much growing up that I would
Yeah.
pray for a zombie apocalypse so I didn't have to go into school anymore.
Yeah.
Whenever I was a junior, I wanted to go to work to make money. I got my GED when I was a junior, and I joined the I finished drywall of all things with my dad. Made good money and did that, and I just wanted to be free and independent and do my own thing. I did a little bit of like online courses,
Yeah.
and but that's the extent of it.
So when did we pick up?
Run! It's Godzilla!
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right. Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
Toys again, and actually like fully pick them up to either collect or something trigger something in your brain. When was that?
Well, a few of the guys that I play music with, they were big collectors.
Yeah.
And I would always look at their collections and think, you know, how amazing, you know, hopefully I can get there someday. And then I don't know, I'm trying to think if there was like a specific moment, but it was like, I think I saw a Swamp Thing figure. And at a like a flea market or something, and it just sort of jolted my memory of this Swamp Thing that I got for my birthday, and it was like a color change figure, and we had these clotheslines in our backyard, and I would straddle that figure on the clothesline and pull it down and let it go and shoot it up into the air.
Yep.
And I remember the day that I got it on my birthday, I did that and I launched it so high, it went on top of our apartment building and got stuck in the gutter. And I was so terrified. I was so sad. But I was also so terrified that I was going to get into trouble because it was like a new toy in the package that I'd just gotten that day. And I was like, I'm going to get in so much trouble. And I just never spoke of it. That may have been like the demise of my toy days, like right there, like at that moment, looking back, seriously. And it's like I was in a flea market or something, and I saw this same Swamp Thing figure.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sort of sparked it. It's like that same figure, you know, gap of what, 20 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it sparked back up.
I love hearing myself. That. Yeah, I love hearing those stories because it's like we all have those toys that, I mean, the longer I'm working with toys or doing interviews or doing whatever, more and more toys are like my memory starts to come back. For some reason, I don't remember a lot about my childhood, but there's select toys that I can remember. And 3 of them come to mind. The one that kind of relates to that there's this Toy Biz Iceman. He's like blue, like not even humanoid. He's just blue. He has fists and there's a bunch of clip-on stuff that goes on him. And I saw that, I think, on eBay or someone posted on Instagram in like a claim sale. And it was like something smacked me in the face. Like that's the one. You had that. And I bought it. I'm not going to ever customize it or nothing. It's just sitting on my shelf in that weird way. But that, and then there's a Cowboy of Moon Mesa that kind of flows like that, and then later on a major Chip Hazard. There was a big one that, like, for some reason I kept thinking of that. But yeah, there's something about seeing a toy from your childhood that kind of jolts something in your soul.
Yeah. And especially like, and then especially when you pick it up and you're holding it and you're looking down at it. And yeah.
And you're, what is so depressing about holding it in your hand is like, your hand is so much bigger than the toy now.
Right.
is there a chance that toy is still in that gutter? Do we need to figure out how to get you back there to go look in that gutter?
You know what, man? It very well could be. You know, I'm about 10 minutes from there. We should just take this party on the road and I'll climb up on that 2-story building and see that
live podcast.
Amazing. Like if I went up there and that thing was just like crammed into the corner there.
And then you auction it off as a part of your episode release. That's how we do it.
No, I would keep that thing. Man, I would have the thing preserved in acrylic.
Yeah.
That would be so amazing.
It's always so good to hear those because those are the stories that, I mean, your life is working with toys. And so you've heard other people say like, you just like you play with toys or whatever. But it's like there's so much more that is connected to our lives and stuff because it starts to bring like psychological things back or like feelings and emotions. And it's almost like a time machine holding a piece of plastic.
Yes, that's exactly what was coming to mind, like time travel.
Yeah.
It is something special and incredible. Mike just can't really laugh. But a lot of people actually don't realize how the toy business part of it gets started.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that story and
let's talk
the other talks then let's talk about it. So I never planned on starting a toy company. Okay. It happened out of necessity. Which some people were like, well, you didn't want to do it? Like you had to? Like that in a good way, it started out of necessity. So I started this toy group on Facebook, Treasure Monster Toys, like right around the time of the pandemic, the major lockdowns and everything. And, you know, we would show off our collections, buy, sell, trade. We would do like raffles.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And there came a point where it was like, well, I don't want it just to be about like selling and doing raffles and things like that. And I was always trying to think of something fun, like a fun group activity where people could be creative and we could build something together. And so one day I connected with Dan Berger. And he's one of the original Mirage Studios character artists.
Yeah.
And he did a commission for me, our group banner. And I had this idea like, hey, man, what if we did commissions where community members came up with character concepts and then you did the artwork in like the true 90s Mirage sort of style?
You know?
Like almost like a continuation. And because, you know, we're always grasping, reaching back for these things that we had when we were younger, which is great. But it's like, what if we could somehow like continue that? Like the same artist, the same, 90s kids. And he was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's give it a try. And so we did it as a raffle. It was like a couple bucks to get a spot. And then the money from the raffle would pay for the commission for the character. And we'd do like an elimination wheel. The last person standing would get to come up with the character concept.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And Dan did the artwork. And everyone loved it. And it just caught fire. And now we've done like 20 characters so far. And then Jim Lawson came aboard and he does the vehicles.
Yeah.
He loves doing vehicles. And that's how it started. And, you know, people, couple bucks for a spot. And now these things, we still do these little raffles and, you know, I don't get anything from those. The money just goes to to the artist, support the artist for the commission work. And it's like they fill in like 10 minutes, you know, and I have to put like these limitations on it. Like you can't get more than 5 spots and all that. And it's just been an awesome thing to build together with the community. It's like you have like the biggest TMNT collectors in the world, many of them are, and they get to interact directly with these original Mirage Studios character artists, Dan Berger, Jim Lawson, and they say, hey, it would be great if we had a character like this with these weapons, and he looked like this and had these powers. And they're like, okay. And then they do the art, and then, you know, after a week or two, however long it takes, we show it in group, like, here's the latest character in the roster, Shadow Line. And so as it went along like that, we kind of formulated the idea of, you know, we call it Shadow Line. Like it's sort of like a mutant multiverse, something that's always kind of been there, and we're just kind of discovering it, going back to kind of pull back out of the shadowy corners of something that was always there. Sort of the idea behind it. And you know, after we got into after our like sixth or seventh character that existed in art as art, people were always asking me like, when are we going to get the figures, you know, when are you going to make the figures? And I was like, yeah, when are we going to get the figures, of course. You know, and so you know, that's when I had to figure out how to make the figures. And so I had the first one 3D sculpted, and I got a 3D printer, and I was just gonna like 3D print them and paint them myself, and you know, maybe sell 10 of them or something like that, make any money on it, but you know, just give the people what they want, you know.
Yeah.
And well, I wasn't too happy with, you know, the fact that it was going to take me, you know, 6 hours to paint one figure to look as good as it should, with, you know, to live up to, you know, having like Dan and Jim involved and the people. It's like, you want it to be good. You want it to be great. And so, and of course we have amazing customizers and, you know, people in the community that's how they do it. They're masters of 3D printing. They do all the painting themselves, et cetera, et cetera.
Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 182. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
But it's like as time went on, I was getting more and more people who wanted these figures. And I realized I wouldn't be able to keep up with the demand myself. And I was also having problems figuring out how to do the articulation. And so then I found this company that did this special, it's sort of like 3D printing, but the raw material is it's like a nylon powder. It's called MJF printing.
Okay.
It's really cool. It's like the machine is like $250,000. It's crazy. And it whenever it forms the figures and it like injects color into the nylon powder as it's forming the figures.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
It paints them. Yeah. And they come out looking like amazing, like with amazing detail. And so that's what I went with. And I was thinking, you know, maybe we would sell 30 or something. And when our first figure came out, I was just going to do a batch of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold out like within a couple of days. And it just kind of kept building from there.
That's a really cool company to find. Holy moly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool to be able to work with past artists, especially when you get to bring in the things that we know and love. I know that like Scott Hensey's been on here, and so it's just, it's crazy to say, hey, I played with your toy and you sculpted my childhood. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so to see that that was happening, and then it like birthed into people desiring that more and more. And I've seen the packaging. I've seen the insanity that surrounds your figure. Inferno is wild. That character is unreal. And
yes.
It's like, it's so cool. And the package art and all those things that go along with it. So you start the Shadow line, which is such a fun play. How did you come up with the idea? Cause you did something that I know that you know what you did, but like, it's something that no one can really achieve as well as that, where you're blending new and nostalgia. But you did it so seamlessly where you're like, no, this line always existed. It was just off to the side. How did you figure out how to do that?
I don't know, man. That's a good question. Honestly, I just, I never tried to force anything. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I was following, you know, everyone else's lead.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, because messing with nostalgia, you have to be careful, you know. And that's, you know, near and dear to a lot of our hearts. And I just kind of, it wasn't so much like leading it. I was just kind of trying to be sensitive to what everyone wanted. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying to kind of follow their desires in our group, in the community. And so whenever I would see green lights for things, like, okay, they want this. So make it happen, John, you know, make it happen. And I just kind of followed it that way. And then I would never try to press my ideas. I have these private chats. It was like 50 or so people, like the core original supporters. And I'll bounce ideas off of them, constantly ask, you know, what they think. I constantly do polls in the community. And just kind of build it together, you know, so it's a collaborative thing. So I don't even think of it as like I did it. I think of it as like I saw what they wanted and I made it happen, but I took the direction by, you know, the community and the fans. And yeah, it worked out.
So when you when you started and you found this type of 3D printing that's doing that nylon thing, and what's crazy, getting the detail, I mean, so much goes into factory work, but you're doing this without paint masks and all that stuff. You figure that out. Do you move to factory production? Do you stay with this? How do we do that transition? Because for those listening, factory production is wildly expensive when it comes to action figures.
That's right. So basically here's, you know, I would sell those MJF figures because they're like considered a boutique figure, that, mm-hmm. you know, made in the USA. And the process is very expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I did this the Inferno pre-order was September 23. Mm-hmm. So we're like about 18 months in. And I would sell the figures loose and packaged, and the loose figures I would sell for $99. I still do. We're on like the last two of our made in USA figures, and it's a limited edition, but the loose figures with accessories, $99. And for a carded figure with like a sealed bubble, $160. Mm-hmm. And that's expensive. Now it's on par with, you know, the what you would call like the art craft boutique.
Yeah.
You know,
all these behind me.
And but still there was so many people, you know, they wanted to buy the figures and they couldn't really, you know, everybody can't afford a $160 figure, you know, mm-hmm. naturally. And so around that time, you know, I always had it in the back of my mind, like we have to move to injection molded figures, you know. But molds are crazy expensive.
Unreal.
And so I was thinking about it, like, am I going to do a Kickstarter? Like, what am I going to do here? So it's something that was always in the back of my mind. And then around, I was going to say a second ago, you know, we're like 18 months in, and we've released 9 of the USA figures. Mm-hmm. I would churn these things out like about every 2 months. And it was like a mad dash marathon. But about halfway through that run, I connected with David Harshawski's and Turtle Milk Studios.
Yeah.
And my popo is my bath. But David Harshawski's Turtle Milk Studios. And, you know, they really liked what we were doing. And we got to talking about Army Ant. Mm-hmm. And I secured that license through David's Turtle Milk Studios to produce and release Army Ant. And originally, it was going to be done as the MJF, multi-jet fusion figures made in the USA. And it was going to be like a $500 figure. And, you know, but we transitioned to, let's do a Kickstarter. Let's do injection molded plastic. Let's make it, you know, like the old school Mega Mutants, Needle Nose and Killer Bee, with like the internal frame, and that's what we did.
And it was watching that Kickstarter, it was wild, because you're looking at, it felt like I was looking at a window to the past as this Kickstarter, as you're talking about Army Ant, and you're talking about the different colors, and you're talking about, well, now we're going to do a different colorway, and this is a different colorway that's potential. And because Army Ant was a figure that was never produced, correct?
Right. It only made it to a prototype.
And I mean, to secure a license to then move into the sculpt phase where you have to get the thing approved and the sculpt approved and how it's going to function and all that. What was that process like? Because that's that lead up time to the Kickstarter is probably massive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it a great deal of thought went into it. And, you know, it's something that you want to handle very carefully, because, you know, the Army Ant was like one of the fabled and released 1990s figures.
Yeah.
One of the most highly sought after, perhaps. And, you know, it's, if you're going to do something like that, because, you know, the collectors community, you know, greatest community in the world, but they are a very peculiar bunch as well.
Yeah.
It's very everyone has their in the original Army Ant prototype, it was never colored,
right?
So like, no one knows what was it going to look like, right? And so everyone has their own idea of what it's supposed to look like. Or even if they had not thought about it before, it's like once they do get around to thinking about it, then everyone has their own opinion of what it's supposed to look like, or what colorway it's supposed to have, right? And so it was a, you know, I had to tread lightly with how I went about choosing the colorway. That was the biggest thing. And so we did a lot of polls. And just like I was saying earlier, I reached out into the community. And I just had a lot, as many opinions as I possibly could. I, you know, connected with Arshawski and the Arshawski camp, and spoke with them about the different options and what they thought. I got feedback from some of the Mirage guys, Steve Levine, Jim Lawson, Dan Berger. And I reached out to some of the, you know, more notable customizers in the community. And I just got as many opinions as I possibly could. And it was also important that, you know, if Army Ant was going to be sitting in between Needle Nose and Killer Bee, that it looks like he belongs there. Mm-hmm. And so that was the mindset going in. And it was just lots of trial and error, and, you know, do a little work, get everyone's feedback, make some corrections, do a little more work, get everyone's feedback. and just line upon line, you know, that way. And I think it, I'm pretty happy with how it turned out as far as like the prototypes.
Yeah. I mean, that is a crazy, journey, especially, I mean, cause when you post something great, there's this reality, like the first comment could say, like, this is the best figure I've ever seen. Next comment is, hey, this would be so much better if. And it just bounces back and forth between those. And so to then go to everyone, which is hundreds of people, and say, you now have input on what Army Ant looks like. Tell me what you think. You're a good person, because there's so much of my brain that's like, nope. No, I can't do this. There's so many opinions out there.
Well, you know, you, whenever you do something like this and you have a wife and you have two toddlers and,
yeah,
you know, you want to be successful and you, to me, it's like, I've always kept it, doing fan service, doing a service to the community first above everything else.
Yeah.
You know, I made those USA figures for over a year and never made any money. You know, I sold tons of them. I sold a lot of them, an impressive amount of them. I never made any money. If anything, I lost a little money. And, you know, it's, but I always kept the community first with, hey, what do you guys want? What makes you happy? Like, what direction? And so that's what's been able to bring us to this point, to where we are gearing up to release our first injection molded plastic figures. And, you know, a lot of companies, it's all about the bottom line, and the bottom line is very important, because if you're not making money, you go out of business and you can no longer make toys, right? Yeah. Like, you have to make money. But so many people get, so many companies get so focused in on that, where the sales department is actually running the company and not the creative department. And when that happens, it's like, that bottom line gets squeezed more and more and more and more. It's like, how can we make the smallest, cheapest toy possible while still selling as many as possible? And then it's just, it becomes like this algorithmic, what am I trying to say? It's like this algorithm of figuring out how to make more pennies at the end of the day. And all of the life, all of the imagination and creativity and excitement, it just goes to the wayside, and there's no magic there. There's nothing special there. And, I don't want to be like that. And so that's sort of like the foundational thing with me, is like, do what the people want.
Yeah.
You know, get their input, keep the magic alive, keep the creativity alive, and, you know, keep all the creative juices flowing between the community, the original creators, and try to make it happen to the best of my ability, to preserve that value we all have, you know?
Yeah. And then Kickstarter opens up, fully funds, which is a task in and of itself in promotion and all the things. And, I mean, probably a huge weight off of your shoulders the second that we see, like, oh, it's 100% funded. We're done here. We got this. And so when that happens, then we move forward with factory and all that kind of stuff. So
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
How far into that process are we now with factories and looking at that kind of stuff?
So, I always like to be one step ahead of things, mm-hmm. You know, have things in place. So, I actually had a meeting with a very well-known toy company CEO. It's kind of a private meeting, so I won't reveal who it was. And I got some contacts to a major brokerage, Insing. And they've been around for like 60 plus years, and they deal with a lot of different things, but they have like five or six factories that they deal with directly. And so I already had an in that regard, which is huge, because you never know. You can go on LinkedIn and you can find, you know, 100 factories in China who will make your toy, but you don't know how it's going to work out at the end of the day, or if it's like some sketchy, like back alley situation. And so that was huge. That was a big confidence booster in having that connection there. And it's a process. It's like the same it's a very similar process to, you know, the USA figures, but it's just at a much, you know, higher level of, you know, you have to get them all the files. You have to describe how you want it. It's, you know, there's so many things with an action figure that we take for granted when we're holding it. It's just like we're playing with it. It's like, oh, that's a cool figure. But it's like, we don't realize that every single minute detail, there has to be a decision made. Mm-hmm. Nothing just happens. Like, no part of that figure just happened that way, as far as how its arms move, what color is where, you know, all the points of articulation, the height of it, the packaging, how the accessories are going to be arranged in the packaging. There are like thousands of decisions that have to be made that like we generally don't think of. And so it's a huge undertaking. It can become very stressful. And so you have to kind of keep yourself in check and like, this is fun. This is fun. I love this. This is what, you know, and not let it bog you down. But it's just a ton of back and forth communication with your rep and your brokerage and the factories, of kind of whittling down from prototypes, from 3D models and images that you have, exactly what it's supposed to be like when it's done. And then you also have, you know, your time span that you're working with, because you can't just like perfect things forever. It's like you have hard dates where you have to have decisions made by this time. And so once you get all the 3D files to them and all the imagery, you have to get the Pantones with color,
which is the worst.
What, the Pantones?
Yeah, I hate that. Color callouts feels like the worst for any toy.
It is. Yeah. You know, when you're thinking about it at first, it's like, well, it's just, you want them to have a red shirt and and blue sunglasses and like, black pants.
Yeah, awesome. Choose between like 2,300 different reds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You have to get like a, you know, like this Pantone swatches that comes in a box like this, like $200+ of just like a million shades of every color you can think of.
Yeah.
And then you go through and you pick your colors. And so then they make a fine cut sample, which is, it's sort of like a 3D printing in a sense. And they send that to you. You check the scale and the height and the movement, and then you approve that. And then they, once that's approved, they start making the molds. And, you know, they make, these are iron molds. Some figures take, depending on the size and how big their accessories are, it could be three sets of tools, could be six, eight, 10 sets of tools. And, you know, you have these giant machines with these microscopic bits drilling into steel, you know, the negative image of your figure, and it has to be perfect. And so there are no mold lines, and everything has to fit seamlessly. And there's so much to that, even like with the G code of knowing which direction and what speed. And it's, and then once they have that, they'll send you the first injection molded plastic test shots for approval. And I actually just got that in the mail yesterday for Inferno. I haven't opened it yet. So these are the Inferno test shots for the first injection molded plastic figure from our company. And right now they are making the Army Ant fine cut sample, and I'll have that fine cut sample here in about a week, and then I'll give the green light, or, you know, say we got to change this, that, or the other before they make the molds for that. And they're pretty quick. And so we have like our estimated ship date for Inferno, Army Ant, and Sledge Hog is September of this year.
Okay.
And
that's really quick.
Yeah, some of the people, you know, and I, of course, I have to say that's the estimated. And
yeah,
I've always been like, I don't like wasting time. I like to, you know, keep the party going. And of course, like when you're producing like a legitimate factory production, you know, you can't rush too much, because, you know, things can get overlooked, and you don't want that to happen. You want it to be right. So, yeah. So I'll get the fine cut samples for Army Ant and Sledge Hog, which Sledge Hog was added. We can talk more about that in a minute. Sledge Hog was added. It was originally a stretch goal, but it wasn't unlocked. And so we did our backer kit pledge manager, and, you know, we have an investor, and we decided to add it to the backer kit as a pre-order, which, you know, it was a questionable thing, because it was like originally for the all-in people. It was like, you get it free for all-in people, but, you know, we didn't reach the funding level that it takes to make it. So it's that, so Sledge Hog is being self-funded. But I digress there with that. Yeah. And I'm really excited that, see, I don't know. I was going to open these, do a live in our group, Treasure Monster Toys on Facebook, to do this. And now I'm here talking to you. I don't know what to do.
Save it for the group. Save it for the group. That's amazing. I mean, walking through that process, I do it with artists, and I help them produce Sufubi or Soft Vinyl Toys, which is, the process is a lot less strenuous than all that. And I mean, you still get like a, what would be a test shot for soft vinyl, and you still see the wax, and then you see the mold, like all those things, and approving along the way. But I think people forget that once they hold the toy or hold something, that it went through all those, and it went through, like, maybe there's a point at which they send you a toy and you're like, no, three of these legs have to be changed because they're not right, which then pushes back delivery time and pushes back. And I can't imagine going through that with, it's always a lot going through it with one. And so I can't imagine going through it with three separate figures, one of which is massive. Army Ant is not a small figure.
Oh yeah. Right. It's, Army Ant's more of a vehicle, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a hybrid between a vehicle and a figure, I guess you could say. But yeah. And that's one of the big things I'm eager with getting my hands on the fine cut sample, is making sure that classic TMNT figures can properly go into the seat and hold, you know, at least one of the handlebars of the turret. Because like with Needle Nose, well, Killer Bee, he doesn't have anything to hold on to. It's just a seat, you know, with a belt. Needle Nose, he has that little sort of what's it called? The gun apparatus there with the radar and the windshield.
Yeah.
But most figures, you can't put both hands on the handlebars. You can only fit one at a time, just because how the figures are. So making sure the figures fit in there properly, that's a big thing for me. And the five cut samples are somewhat brittle. So I'm going to have to like navigate making sure that the fitment's correct while not breaking the one fine cut sample that I'll get.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun. But yeah, man, it is a lot because there's a divergence at some point where it's just like the fun, creativity, you know, it's going to be amazing. And these are going to be the colors and it's, oh, look how cool it looks. And then you get to these sort of like, really, you got to think real hard, you know, like you got to think really hard about a whole lot of different details. And it's like, it can become strenuous. So you have to be careful. You have to kind of keep that balance because you can't overlook anything. It's like no one just comes to you with like all the questions. And it's just like, oh, I get to make this decision and this decision and this decision. It's like you have to think about in advance, like everything, all the questions you're supposed to be asking to make sure nothing's overlooked. And then, you know, you have to, there's a lot of engineering in it. And so, yeah, a whole bunch of decision to be made and you got to make the right ones. And and like I keep saying, you have to be careful to not let it overburden you. You know, you want to keep the excitement and the fun and the creativity and the imagination. So it is most definitely a balancing act.
For the people that have funded this and aren't really toy factory people, like haven't gone through this thing, how are you trying to convey to them, like, hey, we actually still are on target for timing. It's just this long. Like, how do you convey that to them?
So over the past few months, you know, I'll be sure to give an update every 30 days. It's kind of like or if like I get something cool, like these test shots, I'll be sharing this sooner than what would be the next 30 day update. But you know, you just want to be transparent with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to keep them up to date with how everything's going. So far, we're still on track with everything, with the estimated release dates. And, you know, the moment that I see that there's going to be a divergence there and it might be another month or whatever, I'll be sure to say that right up front. You know, as soon as I, you know, get that feeling or that signal from the manufacturer, because they're really good about knowing when they'll be able to have things done and mm-hmm. ship things. And so, yeah, I just keep that communication, keep the transparency, try my best to deliver on what the promise is. And so far we're in really good shape.
Heck yeah. So when you look over the course of Treasure Monster, with these in the works, what do you see as next for this company as a whole?
Well, you know, the collectibles industry on one side, you could say it's a little crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, I think the real magic in the whole Treasure Monster Toys line is sort of the story of how it got started with the community, with these original artists, 90s creators. And I would just love to see that keep going. And I would love to see some animation. I'd love for there to be a cartoon. And you know, you have, see, it's difficult because you go back and forth between, you got to have like your business mind and then you got to have like your creative mind of like the fun of it, the community aspect. But then you also have to have the business mind of like, you got to sell this many, you got to do. So it's a weird thing to talk about. because you're going like back and forth between. But as a whole, I would love to have a Shadowline cartoon. I would love to have, you know, kids wanting to have these under the Christmas tree or at their bar mitzvah or whatever. And, become a huge global phenomenon, right?
Like yeah.
TMNT 2.0.
Heck yeah.
But, you know, you just, and we have some surprises in store that we haven't released yet, announced yet. So hopefully everything goes smooth with those prospects. But ultimately, it's like, you know, a big thing is pricing. You know, a lot of people understand the pricing, especially with like Armia. You know, it was $159 for the Kickstarter. Full-blown retail for Armia is $199. It's like, whoa, $199. It's like, yeah, it's pricey. But it's also going to be amazing. And it's a big figure, but you also have to think about supply and demand, mm-hmm. because we're still a very small company.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we had distribution like Walmart and Target and we had an order of 100,000 pieces, you know, then yeah, it could be much, much cheaper. But we're right now in this phase, we're a small homebrew company, and you know, the collectors community is still fueling this thing on a very personal level,
you know? Yeah.
And so the goal is to get the figures at a better price point. And as we progress and as we have, you know, the support that we do,
yeah,
that's what we plan to deliver on. Because like right now, so we went from mocks, the USA mocks being $160 to now the injection molded plastic mocks full retail, $60. So
that's a significant drop.
Yeah, that's a solid leap, you know, and again, it comes down to supply and demand. You know, if we were, and you got to think, I made the first figure 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so like a year and a half, I think it was about like nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm holding in my hand the first, you know, the injection molded plastic test shots of like iron molds that were made that could make like hundreds of thousands of these things.
Yeah.
Super exciting. I'm not saying that from like an egotistic point at all. Like this just, it kind of blows my mind how fast it happened.
Yeah.
And so as we grow and as we expand our customer base, and we could sell higher volumes, mm-hmm. price goes down. And so that's the goal. Grow the brand. It would be cool to have a cartoon,
you know, yeah.
Pull up Netflix and see like Shadowline on there. But yeah, grow the brand, stay true to what the collectors community wants. Stay true to our origin with it being a collaborative world building experience between some of these original Mirage Studios artists who built all these worlds of our childhood.
Yeah.
And just kind of follow the signal, and you know, where there's a desire, make something happen.
Yeah.
Keep that, you know, because these days, I don't know where the line is, but you know, I would imagine, you know, with the advent of smartphones and you know how technology is progressing, it's, you know, kids transition from playing with toys and action figures to playing on the smartphone at a much younger age than what we did with, whether we did artwork and music or whatever our thing was at the time. So I don't know where I was going with that, but there's just, there's just so many things to take into mind and so many things to consider in this space. You know, you can also think about it as like, well, the adult collectors community, it's like, at what point are they going to be like, well, you know, I have to spend more time mowing my lawn now and taking care of the grandkids and whatever it might be. And, you know, I'm not, and it might be another 10 years to where that core of what is right now, I'd say 34 to, you know, 48, somewhere in that range, you know, 10 years from now, they're probably not going to be, you know, wanting to collect all the toys like we are today. Yeah. Maybe, perhaps. And so what about that next generation? You know, what are they going to be after? Probably Pokemon for sure. But, you know, you have to think about, you have to think about that too. So there's a lot to it, man.
Yeah.
A lot to it.
It's crazy. I've told people this before. I mean, we've had other artists that have had the opportunity to license through Target or something. And when you go to a factory, even if we sell 900 of something and they're producing that, that's massive for us, but that is a really small run for an injection molding factory. And one of the guys that sold in Target, they ordered, it was this like ice cream little figure that was in the dollar section there. And it, they ordered something like 400,000 of them. And, but it was like, they dealt with it. They did all like it, plastic. And it's just, it's like, what factory, what we think is massive versus what a factory thinks is massive is like very different. And so the fact that you were even able to drop it $100 is already wild.
Yeah.
And so I think that that makes it, that shows the love for the fan base, because you could have done this and still said, oh, it's still $160.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes further than that. And like something that's been on my mind a whole lot here recently is like, you know, I would love to see these figures in stores.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you're not going to go down a Walmart toy aisle and see an army ant sitting there for, you know, $109. Highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you can make the Lego argument, I guess, with those like crazy Lego sets, but, and so, and then you have like, you know, the adult collectible area where you have like your NECA and some Super mm-hmm. 7 and things like that. And it's like, okay, maybe there's some real estate there that I could get my hands on. But for an emerging IP, you know, it's tricky. It's a balancing act. And so, you know, if I strike something up with Target or Walmart where they'll buy, you know, or GameStop or wherever, they'll buy 20,000 or 50,000 of these things. Well, they're going to want it cheaper. They're mm-hmm. going to want me to sell it cheaper than $60 for a mock. So what am I to do then? Like change the retail and say, oh, well, the new retail price is now $30 a piece because they just ordered like 100,000 of them.
Yeah.
Well, where does that put all the Kickstarter folks? You know, well, they paid, you know, $50 or $54. You know, that kind of leaves them in the dust, right? So what do you do in that situation? Do you give them like rebates or do you give them like credit, you know, to future releases and things like that?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you got, and then you have to make sure that that's communicated very clearly to everyone. Like, hey, you know, we had this amazing development. Now we're able to sell these things cheaper than even we were able to do for our early backers and patrons. And then you got to make sure each and every one of those people are happy and taken care of, because that's the right thing to do. And without them, you never would have even had the opportunity to, you know, to get them in stores. So
yeah,
it's a very, yeah, it's a, every single decision, man, it's a balancing act, and you got to be super careful with it and make sure you're doing right by everybody.
Yeah.
Make sure you're doing right by, you know, the people that put you where you are, your investors, you know, your own billfold, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we are all so happy that you're doing it, that you are making this happen, because not many people are drawing nostalgia and able to seamlessly blend it with our current collecting climate. And so keep doing that. It's been so good having you on the podcast. The last bit of every episode is the artist gets to plug where we can go to find you, where your groups are, how we can buy or invest in these types of things. So please, please plug away.
All right. So you can follow us on, we're on Instagram. You can just search Treasure Monster Toys. Our main origin grassroots place is on Facebook, Treasure Monster Toys. And right now you can pre-order Inferno and Army Ant and Sledgehog and actually a few of our last USA releases at treasuremonstertoys.com. And so, yeah, definitely go in there and, you know, pick you up an Inferno or an Army Ant or a Sledgehog or all three and support the cause. You know, like I said, you know, we're still small business, still a small homebrew grassroots company, and we're trying to make this into something bigger. So, yeah, go on there, treasuremonstertoys.com, grab you an Inferno or a Sledgehog or an Army Ant. And everyone is welcome to join our Facebook private group. And definitely follow us on Instagram.
Awesome. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Thank you so much for having me.